All right. Welcome everyone to the weekly VC HTTP API work item call. It is It's June 8th, 2021. Just as a heads up to everyone, remember that the call is IPR protected, which basically means that you need to sign up and do an IPR release if you want to contribute technical content to the discussion. If you have not signed that IPR agreement, just please make sure to refrain from contributing any kind of technical content. All right. Today on the agenda, we have just a quick report out on weekly use cases and discussions, a discussion of Mike Varley's trust agent use case, and then authorization with respect to Mike's use case. Are there any other updates or changes to the agenda? Anything else people want to cover today? Any announcements people have?
I would maybe make an announcement that the, I can't remember what it stands for, wallet and credential, interface, the WackyPEX, presentation exchange extension, profile, spec at diff is, hopefully going to be readable by curious parties later this week. There's examples already in there, and the text should be more complete and useful for people to look at. I'm only mentioning it because it may be a useful point of comparison when we talk about bootstrapping later today, as the email thread named it.
Okay. No, Eric, you're on the queue.
Yeah, just wanted to give a quick reminder to everyone that we had set a soft deadline for use cases for next week. So any new use cases you want in, please try to get them written up or let Juan or I know you need some help before a week from today. Then we'll be moving into the distilling process, hopefully.
Great. Thank you, Eric. And Juan just put the link to the WackyPEX spec into the chat channel. All right. Any other announcements and or changes to the agenda? Okay. If there are none, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over. So basically, you know, what happened on the mailing list is Juan, you know, stepped forward and suggested an agenda that might help us address the authorization use cases. As everyone is probably aware, anyone can propose agendas. It doesn't have to be me. It can be anyone that wants to cover an agenda as long as it is appropriate and, you know, is aligned with what we're trying to accomplish in the group. Juan and Eric's agenda looked good. And so we're just going to go off of their agenda. All right. And with that, over to you, Juan. Or okay. Eric, whoever wants to run it.
I think I could just run the report out part, if that's okay, Eric.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. Well, just one thing did come up when we were meeting again this last week. We were thinking about how these diagrams map to the use cases, and you know, we thought the trust agent use case was a really good example of where collectively thinking through the terminology and the mapping and how it relates to the different steps in the flow would help. But one comment that Joe Andrew had was we were thinking about this, the naming of the gray meta category here, and thinking of the division into verifier, issuer, and holder, and thinking through use cases where there are more than, where that sort of real world category of the issuer broke down into multiple real world parties, and thinking about the relationships between them, and whether or not this sort of, if this described a shared incentive or shared interest or trust boundary. And we just sort of thought maybe, the one thing worth thinking about would be if this, I don't know if you guys can see my mouse. If these were categories, we might want to think about a little bit. Sorry, that's kind of a abstract, rambly preface. I think we just want to think through how the parts relate and whether or not this hole, the holder hole in this diagram and the issuer hole in this diagram are maybe part of the confusion, because when we're talking about bootstrapping and authorizing, just thinking about how these parts relate to each other in a little more detail and precision might be helpful. That's sort of a hypothesis. We're going to test it when talking through one use case. If it's helpful, maybe people will take that as homework to refine their use cases with the same kind of precision. If it's not helpful, sorry, I wasted everyone's time. It was just a hypothesis. okay. That was the preface. Any questions, or should we go straight to a use case discussion? I should ask, did anyone read the email thread about, the two different, layers where authorization is happening, about the bootstrapping, and have any comments about that or any thoughts, shower thoughts, as they're called? Sorry, I'm not managing Q. Oh, Manu has, never mind. And her husband. okay. Manu?
Hey, sorry. I mean, one of the things, Adrian's email to the group was very interesting. I thought it was a really good, separation between, I think, the two things we're talking about, which is, you know, there's a concept that some entity shows up to your API and they have this token, basically, and that token gives them the right to, it authorizes them, it gives them the right to use that endpoint, right? So there's, you know, they show up at your door and they've got this thing, and that gives them the right to do whatever they, what they're getting ready to do. The other process is how did they get that token in the first place, right? And I think, Adrian, you said we should try and do both of those things in this group. And I think that might be the crux of the issue, right? Because at least what I'm hearing people say is absolutely not. We should only do one of those things in this group. And that is the, you know, the person shows up part of it, with a token part of it. And we should absolutely not delve into bootstrapping or how that process happens. So let me stop there and see if there are any comments on that, or if other people read kind of the same thing from Adrian's comments.
Justin, are you on the queue?
Yeah, I'll actually let Adrian speak first, though.
Gotcha.
Sorry. I'm just choked up here. the major point that I'm trying to make, and I'm very glad that Justin is here because he has been editing standards around this particular point now for as long as I've known him, mostly in the UMA, but also the Hard Work Group, and now in GNAP. But my point is that it is inconsistent with self-sovereign identity to presume that in order to control something, one has to possess it. So then the question that Manu asked would be, at what layer in the DIF W3C SSI protocols discussions that we are, many of us are involved in, where do we consider this linkage between the controller and the processor, to use the GDPR terminology, or Alice to Alice flows and Alice to Bob flows, which was the difference between OAuth and UMA. And so let me stop there. I will do one other thing, is I just put in the chat a link to a document which I have shared a couple of days ago with the CCG chairs, you know, Wayne and Heather and Kim, to try and get this conversation about, you know, the role of delegation. I also chatted with Christopher Allen, and I refer to the law of agency. He likes to talk, and he's writing up something that's not finished yet about the law of agency. And again, it's this idea that the subject, the hopefully self-sovereign subject, has the right to use agents, doctors, lawyers, accountants, whatever, as when facing the sovereigns. And in this case, the sovereigns are obviously the issuers and the verifiers. So let me stop with that. And if it doesn't, if this discussion doesn't belong in VCHTTP, then we'll have to go back to the CCG and figure out where it does belong. Thank you.
Justin, were you deferring to Adrian temporarily or fully?
Yes, temporarily. I figured... Since his name was being taken in vain, he should speak first. but now that that's happened to me, I'll chime in. All right. So basically, if you could actually go back to the message that was on just a second ago. Yeah, yeah. So this captures something really important. There are, and this is. A bit of what Manu was talking about before is that there's a few different places where the intersection of VCHTTP API, which really, really needs a shorter name, guys, and authorization and delegation protocols like OAuth, GNAP, and the like, really come into play. And without going into excruciating detail, you can look at it as, how do you protect access to the VCHTTP API itself? How do you use the results of a VCHTTP API as in, you know, use a VC and the communicated efforts that come from that in the process of deciding whether or not you're going to answer an API call to a from a different API, and finally, how do you get one of these authorization elements, an access token, in the first place? Each of these different aspects has some very compelling pieces to it. But they're all pretty different from each other. And I think that from my perspective, What's really important with this work is that the modularity of these different pieces not get crossed with each other. Because you can solve all of these in kind of in different ways using different combinations of these technologies. Some of these can be solved in a way that's agnostic to either OAuth or GNAP. So say for just for an example, using a VC as the content of an access token format, OAuth and GNAP don't care what's inside the token from a core perspective, but and that gives you some flexibility in defining these kinds of things using structured data formats like this. Other aspects, though, and where I personally think the most compelling connections lie, are in that whole what's been termed here the bootstrapping process of how do you get this access token in the first place. Now, traditionally, people have tried to approach this, as we did with UMA, with this whole notion of, oh, you can just bring your own authorization server that mints its own tokens, and magically resource servers will just accept this, and everything will be fine and dandy. We know from many years of experience of trying to make this work that it doesn't work. It just doesn't happen from all of the trust bootstrapping problems that the real world brings with it. One of the things that GNAP is trying to shift beyond what UMA was able to really do is expand this notion of what a user can bring to an authorization server, any authorization server, in order to get the access token from it. And in OAuth 2, there's this sort of baked in assumption that the user is going to at some point show up at the authorization server, log in with their account there, click a button that says okay, that's tied to their account, and then get the access token. GNAP tries to explicitly step away from that assumption from a very fundamental architecture and structural perspective. That's, in my view, that's one of the key places where the VC-HTTP API can really start to shine, is that connection of a user being able to show up with their client software at an authorization server that the resource server already trusts to issue access tokens and present to the authorization server using the VC-HTTP API their credentials and proofs and other bits of information that that authorization server can then use to make the decision of whether or not to give them an access token and what to put in the access token. Because then all of the decisions of what's in the access token and where to trust access tokens from can stay inside that coupling between the AS, the authorization server, and resource server, and it doesn't have to leak in sort of awkward cross domain ways, like is possible with things like UMA, but doesn't really fly. I also realize I've been talking pretty solidly. Props to Manu for keeping up with that. TLDR, there are three main aspects to this, depending on where in the process you're talking about connecting these things and how.
You might need Adrian?
Well, if people have questions for what Justin just said, then I'll step back. I have, of course, I completely agree with what Justin said, having worked on UMA, like I said, for a decade. But I have another way of thinking about it, which is much simpler in terms of the jargon that we use in the SSI community. But I don't want to, if people want to react to Justin's perspective, otherwise I'll give you the way I think about what Justin just said very simply is that there are when that token is presented to the to get the verifiable credential, there's only two possibilities. Either the token was signed by the resource server, the entity that is the issuer, typically in this case, doesn't have to be the issuer, it could be the holder, it could be anybody, or it was signed by an authorization server, that as Justin pointed out, the authorization server is, an entity that is trusted, by the resource server. In OAuth, it's typically the same as the resource server. In GNAP, and in UMA, it doesn't have to be. And so if you simply have that idea in mind that this token is going to be signed either one way or another, then on top of that, you get to layer either attenuation as part of the delegation process, or you can layer scopes on top of the delegation process and authorization. But those are secondary. The big question, as far as I'm concerned, for the VCHTTP API is, will the issuer accept tokens that only it has signed, as in a capability, or will it accept a token that is signed by an authorization server, where the authorization server is defined, as Justin said, the place where you bring identity claims, and so on. Thank you.
Manu, sorry.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, plus one to everything Justin said. I think those are good, ways to think about the problem, good ways to, separate these things out together. I don't think there's anything controversial there. And in the same, vein, same thing for what, Adrian has said. Now, I think the major point of contention in the group is, what are we going to focus on? I think what I'm hearing folks in the group and other people would have to, speak up. What I'm hearing is we would really like to just focus on someone shows up with a token and how you got that token is just out of scope. Like all of those mechanisms for how you got the token, it either came directly from the server or it came from an AS or it's a ZCAP or, there was some GNAP, interaction that happened. The end result of all of those things is a token that you then bring to the VCHTTP API to use it. And I think it's just people just want to focus on the very end of that without it's important to kind of separate these things so that these building blocks can be built and then applied to the VCHTTP API without us getting mired in every part of that process. So I'll stop there.
Justin, I think you're up next.
Yeah, thanks, Manu. I agree with that sentiment, and I want to point out that is the first of the three different scenarios that I laid out. The one that you're talking about focusing on is that when you're making a call to the VCHTTP API, you can decide that this API is or can be protected by access tokens, and that access token is either contains or is dereferenceable to particular security aspects. My recommendation to this group for that use case is to simply define things in terms of what is now the OAuth rich authorization requests or the GNAP access list. They are functionally identical with each other. These are basically they're multidimensional JSON structures that say, here's what you're allowed to do here. right? It's a security profile for a specific API. You're defining a specific API. It makes sense that this is the group that would define what those look like. And if you do it in this way, you can use it in both OAuth and CNAPP. So that notion of how you got the token is completely like out of scope. And importantly, it should be there. It also allows you to defer defining how exactly you get back those access structures, how you dereference those, because you could bake them into the token itself, or you could bake them into a protocol such as token introspection. Or you could even just chuck it all in a database and go look it up. Ultimately, that's a separable piece. And again, and back to what I was saying earlier, it's important that these modules that we're talking about are well defined, such that you don't necessarily have to cross them all over the place. Now, to get to the sort of open world, how does a VC HTTP API instance decide that it accepts any particular token? That is a different question from deciding what the token is, how to describe what the token is good for. And those should remain separable questions.
Okay. Thank you. Adrian?
Just to add one question to both Manu and Justin about what they were both saying. The way I like to think about it, and tell me if I'm right, is that there are no identity-based claims associated with Manu's proposal. The token itself has things related to scope, as Justin made very clear just a second ago, but not to identity. I mean, there will be corner cases, which I can describe, but you can all understand that there are going to be where the client, the nature of the client has to bring like a software signature or maybe some claims about the bearer of the, the user attached to the client. Those are side cases that are not that important. They need to be managed, of course. But yes, that's the way I think about it, is the authorization server sees identity-related claims and the issuer, as defined by Manu, does not. Thank you.
And Juan, you're up next.
I just would like to time box this a little bit because I'm not sure Mike can come every week and did show up to talk about his use case today, and we're trying to get the use cases here. I feel like all of this is a little unless someone's volunteering to like do I don't know who's going to do the PRs for making sure that everyone else's work doesn't preclude this different kind of token. And it just feels like listing a bunch of design goals or constraints, but I'm not sure if it's the right time to be doing that. Anyways, just that's my only comment. I'd really like to talk about Mike's use case today while everyone's on the line. What's on?
Okay, and then Justin, I think.
Yeah, I will be quick. What I'm talking about is not just design goals. To be clear, I'm talking about understanding what problem that you're solving, because what I'm seeing in a lot of these discussions is people talking about similar but very fundamentally different problems that are trying to be solved, and that is not that's not a good thing in trying to make progress. And I think that's going to be important. That kind of stuff is what's going to be important for actually resolving and addressing use cases. Very quickly to the point about identity claims, that's exactly the kind of stuff that this group should be defining. that when you get this token and you're able to dereference it by whatever means from wherever it came from, what kinds of things do you actually need to know in order to make that to answer that question of whether or not and how I should serve this request? And once again, that is only one of several different ways that these things can fit together. So be careful you're clear about which one you're talking about.
Thank you. And back to you, Adrian.
Okay, I will be even quicker. In order to try and do this, I've done something that in this community nobody has ever seen me do, is I've actually started writing code. On my GitHub, I am putting up a protected, an OAuth protected, JWT protected verifiable credential that's a like a vaccine credential, and then which was work actually done by Spruce already. And my goal is to show the delta between the OAuth as done in FastAPI and GNAP, the minimal implementation of GNAP, the minimum distance in GNAP to do the same thing, again, in the same FastAPI, and the CouchDB as the database microservice model. And if anybody at all is willing to play with me at this, it's only a couple of hundred lines of code, I hope, please, I'm really lame at coding, so rescue me, and thank you.
I believe that's the end of the current queue, so Juan, I'll send it back to you. And we have a request for the source code in the chat, Adrian, if you want to.
A Grappa GitHub. I'll put it in. Thanks. I will do that.
Yeah. So I reiterate that the, people who are interested in, prototyping how this stuff could work with GNAP, please check out that repo and see if, you can imagine, contributing. So, I did want to, talk about Mike's use case because of the topic brought up earlier. So Mike, would you like to preface this at all? And do you have any comments about the architecture, the terminology, anything?
Thank you. So I'm happy to go through it, and I do have a little preface. And I will try and link it to the conversation that we had around authorization as well. So the preface is that I did write this use case sort of with the hope that it is out of scope. And what I mean by that is that we're able to design the API in such a way that we can enable this use case without specific endpoints, right? So someone may layer in a trust agent, or trust proxy use case without, you know, specific API endpoints. But since I wasn't sure, that's why I wrote it down. The use case is that in an open world of SSI, right now the way the diagrams are kind of sketched out, it is up to every verifier to develop and manage their own trust policy as to the entities, the issuers and the holders and so on that they will accept credentials and presentations from. It may be beneficial for a verifier to, in a way, outsource that trust or that management to what I'm calling a trust agent. So imagine you have an entity, maybe it's a small business, and it says, look, I really want to be able to accept provincial ID documents, but I don't have the connections or the IT staff to keep up with the proper DID identifiers and sort of changing world that is decentralized identity. So I'd like to hook up to a trust agent service that's going to do that for me. And if they tell me that this did represent an acceptable, regional government, then, you know, I trust them and I'm good to go. I will continue processing the information. I have a sequence diagram there, which we can go through, to connect it to the previous conversation. The authorization to call an API. So let's say a holder, has set up a session with the verifier. So maybe a customer has gone to the small business, and in a session, has obtained, you know, the holder has obtained authorization to provide a presentation to the verifier. So that's like the holder now has permission to call an API. It's like having a key to the verifier's lockbox to drop off a message. The content of that message, being a presentation of an ID, is still left to the verifier to process and decide if it meets its criteria, its trust policy. So is the ID that the holder presented from a provincial government, or is it from an out of, you know, state library or something, right? So there is a separation between the mechanics of an authorization, can I call an API, and the actual policy processing of that presentation. Maybe I'll pause there to see if there's any questions or comments before I try and describe the sequence diagram. Anyone?
Mona?
I'm going to try and repeat your point, Mike, just to make sure I'm understanding it.
Sure.
So you're basically saying that this trust agent effectively has a bunch of internal policies that it bases decisions on. And if we design this API correctly, we don't have to care about what that is, right? It's just all we care about are the interfaces into and out of the trust agent. And ideally, the trust agent's just using kind of like the VCHTTP API. So fundamentally, I think what you're saying is like, if we were looking at the, data flow diagram that you had, the VCHTTP API takes care of all things to the left of the verifier. And then what the verifier does internally is completely and entirely up to it. It's internal and it's totally out of scope for this group. Let me stop there and see if I summarized incorrectly.
Put myself on the queue.
Adrian, up next.
So, Mike, listening to your description makes me think that you are describing a health information exchange, which is a federation whose job that basically has two jobs relative to the verifiers, the hospital that would typically be a verifier, seen as a verifier. Number one, the health information exchange does identity, does patient matching. It makes sure that, you know, the issuer and the verifier are talking about the same person. And number two, the health information exchange acts as a federation. Typically, it's based on HIPAA in the place where I work. And so, in effect, it limits the risk of the verifier, because once the verifier has accepted a contract to join the federation, then, in effect, they have a safe harbor. They can blame the HIE for that second thing. So is it fair for me to have sort of summarized in the use case sense what you're talking about that way?
And we have Muhammad, then back to Mike.
Hi, guys. I also just wanted to ask a question just to verify that I understand the trust agent as per se. So in Europe, we are using one service. It's called European Blockchain Service Infrastructure. And this service infrastructure, it holds a trusted issuer registry. It's a registry where DIDs of accredited institutions are stored, and they are only stored after they are accredited by, let's say, ministries. And we are using this service, I guess, as a trust agent. So when Verifier gets a diploma in a form of verifiable credential, there is a DID which is of an issuer. So what we do is we go to the EPSI infrastructure and say, okay, is this issuer in the trusted issuer registry? And if it is, in this case, it's accredited university. So is this the principle of the trust agents we see here?
And back to Mike to answer this question.
Great. Okay. So I'll tackle them slightly out of order. Adrian, Federation, yes, the trust agent would represent a federation of trusted entities, and verifiers could mix and match trust agents or rely only on one. But yes, it is very similar to the concept of relying on a federation for your trust model. With regards to the trusted registry, I would say that a trust agent would actually use that registry, to implement its policies. So the trust agent might have, might be an implementation of this HTTP API. But in order to make its decisions, it would rely on that registry that was described, because it is a trusted registry. A trust agent could use that registry. It could filter that registry. It could combine it with another one that, say, is in another jurisdiction. But yes, that registry would play a key role there. And now back to Manu's question about the API. Yes, you characterized it. I think what I'm hoping for in that, if we design the API endpoints in such a way that as a holder, I can call present credential, to what a verifier describes as its HTTP API endpoint. And that happens to go through a trust agent first, and then gets delivered to the verifier. That's sort of the second alt box in this diagram here. And the holder doesn't need to know that it's actually calling a trust agent or the verifier directly, because the API is agnostic to that. And the authorization tokens that allow the call to go through, you know, aren't being processed by the holder. They're just being used to call that endpoint. Then we can focus on just what those, you know, API endpoints look like. And we don't have to build in extra logic for the holder to say, or to realize that, oh, I'm calling a proxy, or I'm calling a trust agent first, and then I'm calling the verifier, you know, after I get an okay check, or, you know, have to go through an extra authorization dance, to do that. So, that is sort of what I'm hoping for, and really I wanted to bring it to the group to see if we can keep this goal of, you know, allowing the use of a trust proxy or a trust agent in the flow and trying to ensure that it doesn't disrupt the API too much or cause extra endpoints to be created, or if they do, that we keep them in the conversation.
Okay. Adrian, then Manu.
So I'm very glad that Mike brought up this use case, this framing, because in his answer to, you know, the federation part of my question, he did not answer the first part, the other half of what my question or my framing was, which is what I call the patient matching. Where this is critical to us as a verifiable credentials SSI community, is we have made the assumption that knowing that the issuer and the verifier are both talking about the same person, the same subject of the verifiable credential, is seen as a technical thing, not as something that requires a trust agent. Whereas in the example that I gave where I said, well, you know, it's a health information exchange, that it's the health information exchange that basically allows the issuer and the verifier, they're symmetrical in the healthcare case, it doesn't matter, to outsource the patient matching as best they can. So it is not just a trust federation issue, but it is also an identity matching, and we get into, you know, the whole reason we have zero knowledge proofs and all this other stuff, you know, link secrets in the various sites. So I just wanted, again, to highlight the fact that Mike's trust agent case might or might not have both of these characteristics. In other words, they're both a matter of trust. It's just orthogonal. There are two dimensions of trust that are orthogonal to each other. And I don't know whether Mike means both of them or just one.
Manu?
Sorry, I was scribing. I am having a hard time tracking the conversation. So just to kind of respond to Mike, I think, yes, absolutely, the trust agent, is more or less out of scope, and or, if it is in scope, then they should be using the same sort of kind of APIs that we're using with the holder, the issuer, and the verifier. At this point, I'm confused, and I don't know if the trust agent is in scope or out of scope, but if it's in scope, it feels like we shouldn't be creating a whole bunch of new APIs just for the trust agent, just for a proxy. We should be reusing the same APIs, because if we have to create new ones like this, it's kind of a signal that we didn't get the fundamental APIs, right. But that's about all I can kind of divine out of this. I'm confused by the nuance that you're calling out, and I don't see how it applies. I think part of the issue here is that we're going more and more meta and getting the use cases more and more complex, when I think we should probably be going the other way. We should be going and scoping tighter and tighter and tighter until we're talking about a single API and what we want that API to do, right? So I feel like we keep going up and having meta conversations, and you can have meta conversations forever, rather than focusing in on the API we have today and what we can apply. So I felt like, you know, the direction Justin was nudging us was a useful one, because we could come to some kind of concrete realization of, you know, something that could work for OAuth 2 and GNAP, and put it in the spec, like concrete spec text. I don't know how now it feels like we're getting further and, you know, further away from that. So just an observation.
Mike, then Adrian.
Okay. So Adrian, for your, patient match, question, I would again say that is another function outside of this specific use case or API's requirements. So patient matching or looking at two sets of data, whether it be, you know, name, address, date of birth, or whether it be did presentations with link secrets. That kind of processing of, am I dealing with the same person? It's an important one, but I would say it's another function that an identity network would have to build. I don't know that I have anything to add to Manu's comment. I agree that getting to the concrete for what we want to do for authorization, is key. And I feel as though we're getting to the point with this trust agent conversation that we can also be concrete in saying, you know, good use case, keep it in mind, but let's focus on, you know, the core functions of this issuer holder verifier API, and do our best to not code for special cases, even one as interesting and you know, valuable as a trust agent may be.
Adrian.
So to clarify this for both Manu and to some extent Mike, the link that I put in the chat is this orthogonality that I am talking about. You know, it's an example of it where this is a vaccine credential, right? It basically says the issuer is somebody that vaccinated somebody, and the verifier needs to know without having to refer to a driver's license or expect that the vaccinator has checked a driver's license and put a driver's license number or a name as part of the vaccine credential, the way it's typically done. This, in this particular case, and this is something I actually invented, there's a 32 by 32 pixel rendering of my face as the quote logo, in a standard QR code, which is recognizable by the verifier. But because it's only 32 by 32 by 4 bits, it can be hashed reliably into the verifiable credential. And so this actually works on paper, without reference to any blockchains or any central registry. So this is the orthogonality issue that I'm talking about. Once you introduce a trust agent, like Mike is, you can separate out these two roles. And like he said just now, the issue of level of assurance, which Justin has done quite a bit of work on as part of the Federation, and he might want to tell us some of that. It's actually this work he did a couple of years ago. So what I'm doing here is a hack, admittedly, but it is this difference between the level of assurance of the security chain is different from the trust, you know, that the vaccinator was actually, you know, using the right vaccine and so on. Thank you.
Right. So, yeah, to add on to what Manu and Mike were both saying, it's, the separation of these bits is very important. And if there is a, policy engine, that you're using to make these decisions, or it's just a, you know, an if statement, that should all be totally okay. Right. What is helpful from an interoperability standpoint is having a way to describe what it is that you're asking for and allowing, and how you process that, how you reason on it, and how you fulfill that can be handled in a bunch of separate ways, which is what I was trying to push towards earlier when saying that I do genuinely believe it would be very helpful for this group to define rich authorization request style objects, which to Ori's comment in the chat, that came from GNAP. That's what GNAP uses to describe these things. You know, use that type of structure, define those as you define your API, and you are effectively defining a reasonable security layer that'll be flexible and usable with the API that you're trying to define. This is separate from how you actually process all of the VCs and everything else. And yeah, I think that's all I have.
Okay, thanks. Just wanted to get a time check in, Manu. We're 2 minutes from the top of the hour.
So. Yeah, we need to wrap up the call, Eric. So if you or Juan had anything else you wanted to cover, now would be the time to do it.
I'm good.
Yeah, I think final statement would just be a reminder to get use cases in, and the more detailed, the better. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Eric, and thank you, Juan, for taking us through the use case. You know, we need to continue this discussion on the mailing list. I think, you know, I've gotten multiple emails, you know, in the past 2 weeks. People are frustrated at the rate of progress. And so, you know, the only way we get through this is we understand each other better about what people want and what's in scope and what's out of scope. I thought the thread that Adrian kicked off on the CCG group asked the right question, right? It was a scoping question. And so maybe what we can do over the next week is really get down to the nitty gritty, the scoping questions. So all that to say, let's have an active discussion on the mailing list before next week. Because, you know, this time's expensive, to get everyone a call together, and hopefully we'll be able to make some progress, asynchronously. We will try to run some proposals and polls next time, to see if we can get, some things clearly moved out of scope, to try and whittle the problem down. All right. That's it for the call today. Thank you, everyone. Have a good weekend.